Good morning. This is KBOO Radio 90.7 FM Portland. Today I'm speaking with author Hal Nowitzki and about his new book, The Peep Diaries: How We're Learning to Love Watching Ourselves and Our Neighbors. It's a fascinating, timely look at our culture and how it's being shaped and affected by Twitter, Facebook, reality TV, bloggers, etc. Well, thanks for being with us, Hal.
Oh, my pleasure.
This really is an interesting and important topic that's happening right now. It's hard to figure out where to start, though, because it's such an enormous subject that touches all of us. So maybe let's get a little background about why you decided to write it and what made you want to tackle this subject.
Sure. I had written a book called Hello, I'm Special. How individuality became the new conformity. And I wrote that, say 4 years ago, or 5 years ago now. From that, after I'd written that book, all of a sudden we had this new wave of technologies. Blogging was starting to come in to be very popular. Twitter and Facebook all emerging, and MySpace and LinkedIn and YouTube videos and all these things were really coming to the fore, and I began to think about those ideas that I talked about, this sort of rise of individuality as a kind of conformity, everybody wanting to be special. And I said, this is an ongoing story. The culture continues to change, and individuality and how we perceive it continues to change. Through the lens of all these new technological options to sort of advertise ourselves. And so that's kind of how I started to think about what eventually became the Peep Diaries.
This has just been unfolding at such an enormous rate that it is really kind of hard to even stay current. It's growing as we're talking. So maybe let's start with, and maybe you can help explain your concept, overshared, and shift from the pop culture to the peep culture to kind of give us the broader background.
Sure. Well, I start the Peep Diaries off by noting that in 2008, the Webster's new word of the year was overshare. And overshare was a term that was coined to kind of describe people who are putting too much information out online via their blog or their Facebook account or some other social network, that they're just a little over the top with what they have to share with people, not everyone being their personal friend. For instance, you might say going out for dinner, but then you might say going out for dinner having the shrimp. Then you might say, going out for dinner having the shrimp, dining with my ex-girlfriend, didn't tell the wife.
too much information. Yeah,
at that point you've reached your overshare, and this was happening over and over again. And what's interesting about this phenomena is that it was something that kind of people weren't really realizing what they were doing, sort of crept up on them, that it's not that they sort of set out to say too much.
I think there's a generational thing also, in that you and your peers and even younger have grown up in a much more comfortable state than, say, myself and people who are, over 50, who are kind of like new best friends. 300 friends. Is this a possibility that you could have 300 friends?
And
what does the language mean if you can have 300 friends that you share with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The whole friend euphemism, which is something that maybe we should come back to. So basically, what I did was I set out to kind of understand this whole question of, are these people really your friends? What are they? What is the relationship you have with your Twitter followers or your Facebook friends or your blog readers or other people who are essentially deriving a kind of entertainment from following you? They're watching your everyday life, and it's an entertainment pastime. So instead of turning the TV on, I might go to YouTube and watch videos of non-celebrity, non-professional actor people doing things or talking. And so what I said was, we're moving from the age of pop culture, popular culture, to the age of peep culture. In pop culture, we were entertained by professional actors, singers, dancers on TV and on stage, And in peep culture, we're entertained by each other. We're using our own private details of our lives to entertain each other. That's the essential narrative that I talk about in the Peep Diaries, which is how this shift is occurring, how we're moving from pop culture to peep culture, and what the implications are on our lives and on our society.
It's not just about the people who post, as you've just referred to, and are actively involved, but also about those of us who just watch or consume, and kind of the consequences for all of us of being part of this culture.
Absolutely. And you talk about the generation gap, and I think that there are people out there who would like to be able to say, oh, I'm not part of this because I don't do any of this, so I'm not implicated in it. But the truth is this is a massive social shift, and even if you're not an active participant, you are probably in some way a passive participant. So even if you watch videos online, you're involved in this.
And I was thinking, even in a benign way, going to YouTube and finding out about election results, or participating that way, or watching reality television.
That's right. Reality television is definitely a peep culture phenomenon. It's one of the kind of first forays, the first mainstream shift away from deriving our entertainment from celebrities to deriving our entertainment from just watching other people who are our peers. I think it's kind of naive to say that there are people out there who could step away from this and not be part of it. If you look at the news and how the news is reported, it's being heavily affected by this shift to peep culture. Much more attention to people's lives, the intimate details of their lives, and trying to get, you know, more videos, more pictures, more personal, up-close stories of the person behind whatever tragedy or news story they're covering.
Yeah, it lends itself, and of course we can think of a multitude of examples of where it's kind of been gone awry. But why are we all so addicted to peep culture? Because like you said, it's very enticing in some basic way.
Yeah, oh, it's incredibly enticing. And I mean, I think there are two big reasons about why we're so addicted to peep culture and why it's become such an incredible juggernaut in our lives, so fast moving. The first reason is we want community. We want friendship. We want people to notice us, not as statistics or, you know, the unemployed or the employed or demographics, you know, people who are likely to do this or that. We want to be noticed intrinsically for who we are as human beings. And so a lot of this material that we're putting out there gives us that opportunity. And so there's a really enticing aspect to this, which is a kind of way to return to the sort of communities that maybe we used to have
or wanted to have and feel like they're creating. I know a lot of people and certainly a lot of movements, everybody using that as a tool to become involved in a greater, broader community and feeling some sense of union.
Yeah, exactly. Coming together, feeling like we're all in this together. We're all sharing our feelings. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
I put something on Facebook about my daughter's ear infection. And I have 2,000 Facebook friends, most of whom I have never met. And the next thing I knew, I was having a conversation with 10 different people about my daughter's ear infection and how I should treat it. And should, you know, one person was saying, don't take antibiotics. The other was saying, do this, do that. And so we had this entire conversation about this. And in many ways, the only equivalent been something a long time ago when, you know, we lived in a small village and everybody knew everyone's business.
You know? Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, that's my call waiting.
That's fine. Speaking of technology, we're used to all kinds.
Yeah, there's another, I'm going to use my call display to see who's calling me. So, you know, if you lived in the shtetl or the longhouse, and you had a sick child, well, everybody knew about it in your community, your family, your friends. You know, you never could feel that you were a sort of anonymous cog. And I think that trying to recreate that feeling that people care about you and are concerned about you, that's very addictive. So that's kind of number one. Number two is this incessant, overarching emphasis in our society on celebrity. So people are constantly being barraged with this idea that celebrity is the ideal.
Is valuable in and of itself. Really, like I said, for those of us who haven't grown up with it, it seems still a bizarre concept. I must tell you, more than once have thought, so Paris Hilton is famous. Why?
Yeah.
What?
And you're not the only one who has thought.
Why?
That, of course.
I don't even pass judgment on her. It's just, how does this happen?
And she is a great example of a peep culture figure. And one of the early greats of peep culture, you might say,
yeah.
who is reality television and just kind of paparazzi and interest in anyone who is young and rich and pretty. You know.
And yet it was a very strange moment when this was used to deride Obama. I mean, this was the commercial. This is what was going to be his Achilles heel, that somehow when he went to Europe and was received as a celebrity, that made him vacuous and unimportant and just part of the celebrity culture, which, of course, is not true. They are not the same. And so I think this kind of gets to the bigger point in your book when you were referring to it isn't all bad.
No, I mean the phenomena is not necessarily bad or good. It just sort of is. What's happening is how a lot of people are using these phenomena and being used by them. So people will be enticed into doing things that are against their own interests and putting things out into these conduits of information that never disappear, and they don't realize that, and so there's negatives. The positives, of course, are also there, that there's community, there is grassroots potential for connection, for people coming together.
And we'll have to talk a little bit about your own blog and your attempts at becoming involved, even more immersed. But you said that you were surprised at how validated that it felt when people read your post and responded with supportive comments and ideas and suggestions.
Exactly, absolutely. And again, there's this sort of double-edged sword there that, you know, you put these things out there. My daughter has an ear infection. Oh, I have a problem. I'm looking. Is there anyone in Boston who can advise me what restaurant to eat at tonight? Because I'm traveling through that area. And you get responses and validation. And people say, hey, I read your post. I like your ideas. And it's incredibly validating, especially when you are not necessarily putting anything out there that's particularly valuable. So in other words, the validation is just a validation of your everyday life.
Yes.
Saying, you exist, you matter, you're a person.
You've been heard. Your voice has been heard.
Yeah, your voice has been heard, which is, I think for a lot of people, we're in this sort of culture where we're sort of repeatedly told over and over again every day, your voice is not going to be heard unless
right.
you're a celebrity, unless you do some incredibly over the top thing. You're not going to be noticed. You're not going to have a voice in our society. But the flip side of this, of course, is that it becomes very addictive, and the danger is that you do start putting out things that you shouldn't be putting out there.
Well, let me interrupt here and remind our listeners that we are talking with Hal Nowitzki about his new book, The Peep Diaries, How We're Learning to Love Watching Ourselves and Our Neighbors. This is all about the new culture. Give us a little bit of background now, because you have some, I wouldn't say warnings, but some experience of saying, but look at the dangers of posting too much of yourself and exposing too much of yourself, and how it can be utilized by third parties as well.
There's incredible lack of awareness around what happens when you put out a Twitter or you update your Facebook page. Well, that material is not going away ever. It's being chronicled. It's being put into search engines. Corporations are noting what products you mention, what movies you have said you like. They're tracking you individually, and they're tracking you as a kind of amalgamation of someone who might be like you. That you are in the process of talking about your everyday life, whether it's blogs or Twitter or anywhere else. You are creating this incredible database of information.
And even if you don't suspect for any terrible reasons, it is the commodification. It isn't as if these people are your best friend or have your interest at heart. They may not be negative that they don't, but they don't.
No, they don't. I mean, for instance, I bought a book over Amazon. It was an academic book about sexuality and one woman's exploration of certain aspects of online internet sex, internet chat rooms and stuff. And you know, the next thing I knew, Amazon.com was sending me recommendations on what I'd like to read. You know, they were saying, based on this book, you would probably like to read The Internet Prostitute's Handbook or something.
Oh, yeah.
Very
unwittingly becoming part of that.
Yeah, and the, you know, there's kind of these Autobots that do this. You know, they gather the information and they make assumptions about who you are and what you're planning to do, and they put that material out there. Now, of course, you know, in some context it's funny, in another context it might not be funny if someone I applied to a job for was to receive that information from Amazon, that this is my interest. Who knows? They may decide to deny me that job, and that's exactly what we're seeing quite a bit in the book. I have a ton of examples of people who have been denied admission to college, been fired or denied jobs based on their oversharing, based on what they've put out in a blog or accidentally posted to a Flickr site, or just sort of information that gets attached to their name and never goes away. And even, 10 years later, they're finding that now it's resurfacing. You know, your arrest for possessing marijuana, one marijuana cigarette.
The one thing it does is that it's, like you said, it's out there forever. And for those of us who came of age pre-video, I've often thought, even my children who came of age under the video cam, that I would not want to be held to my strident and stringent beliefs at 18 and 20 when I was sure I knew. Looking back on it now, are you the same person? Of course not. And I think the more that we find ourselves unwittingly trading our lives for attention, you say that the money and goods and services, and the more we enter a situation of unexpected consequences, I think it's that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just out there. You don't know how it will be used.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's this world of unexpected consequences. We are kind of putting out there, making assumptions. We assume that, for instance, if we post something to our Facebook friends, that we are doing so with a kind of expectation of who we're speaking to, that we this information is only going to go to our Facebook friends, which is, of course, incredibly naive. And employers and college admissions officers and law enforcement and government and corporations, they all are going to look at this and use it to their own purposes, which is, not always bad, but it's also not always good either. The real question is to be aware of this and to make sure that you're using it in the right way, that, it's your objectives that are going to be advanced, not other people's objectives that are often unstated and unknown.
And unknown.
The book is filled with an amazing number of stories
of
people who have run afoul with things, and also people who have found a lot of validation in the process. But the two things can also happen at once. On the one hand, you can be validated and recognized, but on the other hand, you can also be turned into a even more of a product than we're already being turned into.
And of course, that therein lies some of the irony. At the very time when becoming so attached to all of this, is all of the communications and devices, is an attempt at diminishing the loneliness, the separation, and forming communities. At the very same time that there's this anonymity community, is this really what community means? It can, in a new form and shape, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. And the book is wonderful at at least exposing to people in a very entertaining way, I might add, which is really important. I mean, speaking of entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. Your blog has to be entertaining, number one.
It is. And this is a really good mix of reporting with the sociological observations.
Yeah, yeah, it's not by any means a lecture or anything like that. It's in a way, it's a kind of travelogue as I move through this landscape. I talk to people who become just so wrapped up in their world, and they think to themselves that they have a community. For instance, a woman who is blogging, 10 times a day about her life post gastric bypass surgery. And her sort of recovery to health, and her ultimate goal, which is to become a kind of Oprah-like sort of self-help guru. And I'm talking to her, and she's saying, "Oh, all these people. I have regular readers who are constantly commenting and posting, and she sees them as very much a community. But I see them, as a kind of peep community. They're a community as long as she is revealing all these intimate details and providing them with all this entertainment. But when she stops doing that, I don't think they're going to really be there for her. Maybe one will be there. But
you do a great job of capturing just the uneasiness about it all. So is my function in life to be entertaining, and is every moment of life worth recording and remembering?
Yeah. I mean, should I be twittering right now saying, recording a radio interview on the radio with an interview right now? Where does it end?
And it does, bring me full circle, like I said, for those of us who are considerably older, that when everybody on the soccer team gets an award, then it really brings into question, so we're doing this why? So this is what? What's the significance of what you're saying? And it almost diminishes some of the actual sharing that can occur and does, that does feel authentic.
Yeah, I think it's a real concern. I think on the one hand, you have to recognize that if you are, using these online communities to kind of replace missing aspects of your life, it's not going to ultimately be successful. It's not going to end well. Somewhere down the line, you're going to find out that as you pointed out, the irony is too much to overcome. Trying to return to age-old meaningful communities using some of the most sophisticated, corporatized, globalized technologies in the world is a very difficult one to ultimately sustain. so people have to reckon with that at some point in what we're doing here. That you still need face-to-face interaction. You still need real friends. And if I put on my blog, "Oh, I've broken my leg," I might get 50 messages of sympathy, but not one of those people is going to be coming over to my house
and bringing you soup.
bringing
you soup or helping
exactly.
you get up.
And yeah. Saying, "What can I do for you?"
Yeah.
Because they're not a real community. And a real community, when I went to Twitter, when I sat down with the creators of Twitter. And for those not familiar with Twitter by now, I don't know if anyone
isn't
claimed to be, but it's a service where you basically have people following you, and you put out short bursts of information in 250 characters or less. And I sat down with those guys, and this was probably a year and a half ago, and they now have an unbelievable number of users. 20, 30 million users, where when I was talking to them, they had less than a million, which is just astounding. But they described this service as connection without expectation. And that was what they said was so appealing about Twitter when I asked them. And that phrase has really resonated with me as a kind of catchphrase for a lot of what's happening with peep culture, is that we connect, but
without expectation, which, again, against the human background of what is the point of connecting? if there isn't something deep and meaningful that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, what are you connecting for? What's the goal? And increasingly, we're connecting to kind of sell ourselves. We're selling ourselves as saying, hey, look at me, look at me, look what I can do. And in that process, there's good and bad about that process, but the obvious danger, the ongoing danger, is that we all basically become product. We're constantly selling the product. You know, I'm always selling the product of how, which, as you said, is a very uneasy feeling.
Yeah. You've done a great job in the book of really, like I said, capturing that. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for being with us. Peep culture really explores the implications on entertainment, society, sex, politics. It really does a good job of creating that very real tension and unease. And I think we need to give people your blog that you can watch.
Yes. ThePeepDiaries.com. Same as the book.
Book.
You've got to throw on the .com, and then you'll see there's a trailer, or there's sample writing from the book, and of course the blog.
Again, I want to remind our listeners that we've been speaking with Hal Nowitzki about his new book, The Peep Diaries, How We're Learning to Love Watching Ourselves and Our Neighbors. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for taking on this big, complex, but very interesting and important subject. And we will look forward to seeing you online.
Okay, great. And thanks very much to you and your listeners.
All right, thanks. This is Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher at KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.